Holy Batman, it's the 30th episode of Head Speaks. I made it. A little delayed, but here it is.
Just kick a little something for them cars that be bumping.
Yeah, right, but we need a beat that they can front to. Oh, that works. Be funky. You know what I'm saying? Cars ride by with
the system. Hello, greetings and hi. This is the Head Speaks podcast, a proud member of the Headcast Network. I am your host, Aaron Moss, also known as Head. Welcome to Head Speaks, where I'll be talking about comics, movies, and basically anything geeky. But without further preamble, let's get the show started.
12 o'clock at night with your windows down. Headlights breaking because your battery's drained. Armor roll on your tires and a big gold chain.
I know it's a little delayed, but here we are, the 30th episode of Head Speaks. This time out, we're going to have Bitches, Moans, and Gripes, where I talk about comic books and fanboys and the like. And then we've got What's in Head's Long Box, where I'm going to continue my retrospective on the Atom. And we're going to look at the Sword of the Atom special, number one. And let's see what else we got. But let's go ahead and get started.
Bitch and moan, bitch and moan, bitch and gripe, gripe and moan. Bitch and gripe, bitch and moan, bitch and moan, bitch and gripe.
Brotherheads, Bitches, Moans, and Gripes.
On today's episode of Bitches, Moans, and Gripes, I'm going to talk about something that I have mentioned on Facebook, on the Unite DC Comics group that I've mentioned before. I am very vocal on the Facebook groups about what I like, what I don't like about these movies, trailers, and everything else that the comic companies put out there for us. If I don't like something, I'm going to tell people why and express what I think. And an odd, I don't know if it's odd, but an occurrence I've came across is that a lot of people feel that if you have negative comments towards a trailer, for instance, that they label you as a hater automatically. And a lot of people, I've heard people say on Facebook, well, it's just a trailer, you can't have any negative comments about it. Or something along those lines. And I think that's very strange and odd. In fact, Michael Bailey from Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, and from his own Views from the Long Box podcast, has made a similar comment on his feed recently, very much stating what I've said in the past to other people. But it's funny that if you have a negative opinion about a trailer or scenes that have been put out from the movie company or whatever it is, photos or whatever, if you have a negative opinion, you're not supposed to voice those. But if you have a positive and it makes you, it fills with joy, well, that's fine to say. And like Michael was saying, I mean, and I've been saying the same thing, that these trailers are out there, yes, to get people hyped up, to get people interested in a movie or a show, whatever it is. But, again, if a trailer, the way a character acts, an actor acts in a trailer, can excite you, can make you eager to see the movie, then if you can say, well, you know, so-and-so, in fact, I'm going to pick one that I, things I've been called out on before recently. People said they love what Ezra Miller's done in the trailers for the upcoming Justice League movie and his small little cameo in Batman vs. Superman. I, on the other hand, I don't care for that casting. I don't care for the costume. I think the Flash costume is too big and bulky. I don't like the metal, the helmet it's got, the shoulder pads. To me, the Flash costume should be more streamlined. It should be, I would prefer spandex. The leather that we're getting on the CW show is close enough, in my opinion. I would like it if it was a little thinner, a little more spandexy, if you will. But the armored version we're getting in Justice League and that they showed in Batman vs. Superman just doesn't do it for me. And the same way with Ezra Miller's, just his general look. He doesn't look like Barry Allen. I know Grant Gustin from the CW doesn't exactly look like Barry Allen. But something I've been saying for a while now, that it looks like blondes are outlawed in comic movies. Because any blonde hair character, for the most part, they're changing to a darker haired. But I think I'm going off on a different tangent. I just don't like Ezra Miller's look. I don't think he looks like it. Looks like Barry. fact, when we were watching Batman vs. Superman, my younger daughter was with us. And when Ezra did his Flash stuff, my daughter's like, who's that? Well, it's supposed to be the Flash. That doesn't look like the Flash. It looks like a homeless guy. Out of the mouth of babes. But, so anyway, so I have expressed these opinions that I don't think the Flash suit looks good. I don't think Ezra Miller looks good as the Flash. I've also expressed my disappointment in Momoa as Aquaman. Again, that's a whole different subject there about Aquaman not having blonde hair, but which I just touched upon a little bit. But again, I said that I don't think Momoa's got the right look for Aquaman. And I'm going to get a little bit of that. He's too big, too bulky. He doesn't have the swimmer physique I would imagine Aquaman should have. And everything I've seen Momoa in, albeit it's only been a few things. I know he was in a Conan movie, and then Khal Drogo from Game of Thrones. These are big barbarian type guys, and that's not who Aquaman is. Aquaman is the king. He should be, you know, eloquent. And Momoa may surprise me, may pull it off. I don't know. From the trailers, I haven't gotten enough from him to change my opinion on him yet. But I'm willing to give him a chance, but I'm just not liking what I'm seeing. And whenever I make these comments, people tell me, well, you haven't seen enough. It's just a trailer. It's just a few seconds in the movie. You haven't seen enough to judge him yet. Again, as I said earlier, I've asked them, why is it enough for you to judge that it's going to be a fantastic movie, but it's the same material that you're saying is going to be fantastic, it's not enough for me to judge that it's not. I just think that's double standard. I think it's BS. Again, if that 2-3 minute trailer is enough for you to say, oh my God, Ezra Miller did a fantastic job, or Momoa looked fantastic, then to me, I've still got that same 2-3 minutes. I can voice my opinion that I do not think that Momoa is pulling off Aquaman, or I do not think that Ezra Miller is the Flash. And again, I could go off on several different tangents on this, but that's my main point of this bitch's moans and gripes, is that keep in mind next time someone complains, yes, there are true haters out there. There are people that's going to hate everything DC puts out no matter what. There are those that's going to hate everything Marvel puts out there no matter what. There are those that's going to hate comic book films in general no matter what. But there's a difference between the true haters and people that actually enjoy the genre, the movies, but they actually have legitimate complaints. So that's all I'm really trying to say with this episode or this segment is, before you want to label someone a hater and tell someone that your comments shouldn't count or shouldn't matter, why don't you stop and look at what the person's saying and actually consider it before you decide that you're going to automatically call them a hater or that their point shouldn't matter because they didn't see enough of it yet. Again, the same 3 minutes that you've watched that you've deemed the movie fantastic from that, another person can see the same 3 minutes and they can see things they don't like. And I've also another, along the same lines, I thought I was going to sign off on this, but something else came to mind. I've heard people say, well, if you don't like these movies, you're not a true fan. Again, I think that's BS. That's complete and utter bull. I'm a lifelong superhero fan. Again, as I've stated here and elsewhere, I've only been into comic books themselves as far as collecting them for the past 30 years. But superheroes have always been a part of my life. I grew up on the Batman 1960s Batman series, in reruns, of course. I grew up on the Super Friends. I grew up on Nicholas Hammond's Spider-Man. The Incredible Hulk, Wonder Woman, all the Captain, the Red Brown Captain America. As far as I remember, comic book themes have been a part of my life. I remember back in first grade, me and my cousin, Larry Park, we would break and lunch in our school. We had one of those tall jungle gym things with a bar down the middle, and we had a cement pipe part that was halfway buried in the ground. And us, that was the Bat Cave, the Bat Pole, and the Batmobile. We played Batman and Robin. So as long as I remember, I've been a fan of superheroes. So to tell me that I'm not a real fan because I don't like the way this costume looks or I don't think this actor is the right choice, again, I think you can be a fan and not be a sycophant. And that's what, in my opinion, a lot of these people are close to. They're just sycophants saying, oh, I love everything DC puts out, movie-wise, everything's perfect. No, it's not. Again, I'm a big DC fan. I'm more DC than Marvel, to my son's chagrin, because he's got a lot of questions about some of the older Marvel stuff, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not that familiar with that, son, sorry. But as far as the cinematic-wise, I agree with myself that, and other people, that I think that Marvel's hitting it out of the park. I wasn't a bit, the first Thor was all right, though I'm not a huge Thor fan. I thought Thor 2 was underwhelming. Iron Man 3 had a lot of issues and was underwhelming. But other than that, I've enjoyed, I think, every other Marvel movie they've put out. And I think they're hitting out of the park. I've also enjoyed what DC's put out, but overall, I think Marvel's doing a better job at it. And a lot of people say that Marvel movies are more kiddie or more comedies. Yes, there are some comedy aspects to them. And I wouldn't say they're kiddie films, but they're more what I call family-friendly films. You can take your kids to most of these films. Whereas a lot of the DC films aren't really aimed at the entire family. They're going for more of a, in quotes, mature theme. Which, again, I... As I said, I had a recent Facebook discussion about this, that I don't feel that, except for the few exceptions, Deadpool, Wolverine get away with it, a few others like that. Punisher's definitely one. But most of your films, if it's a comic book film, in my opinion, should be more PG, PG-13, something the whole family could go to. It doesn't need to be dumbified down and kiddified. But for the most part, I don't think Marvel's doing that. I think Marvel's making movies that are aimed at the entire fan base instead of just looking at adults and saying, this is for you. And to me, that's what comics is built on, the kids. A good comic book should be able to appeal to kids and adults, in my opinion. And again, you do have your other comics out there. I mean, there's Preacher and things like that. But yes, it is definitely intended for an older, more mature audience. But those, to me anyway, should be further and further between. You should have more of your books and more of your comics and everything aimed at more of a family-friendly, as I said, a PG, PG-13 audience. Something that the whole family can get behind. But again, that's just my opinion on it. I could be wrong. I'm usually not. But I think I'm going to wrap this up here. That's been, you know, my complaint about this. What do you guys think? Am I crazy? Am I full of it? Am I completely wrong on my take? Or do you guys agree with me? Let me know. Send me an email at head@headspeaks.com. Again, that's head, H-E-A-D, at headspeaks.com. And let me know what you guys think. Which side of the fence do you fall on? I'm waiting to hear from you. We're going to take a quick break, hear some promos for some other shows that I enjoy, and then we'll be right back with What's in Head's Long Box. See you after the break, kids.
Head Speaks will be back after these important messages.
Hey, folks. This is Jared Albrick, a.k.a. the Yard Sale Artist and semi-regular co-host of the Long Box Crusade podcast with Pat Sampson. Pat came to me recently with a fantastic idea on how we might get the podcast community involved in taking some action to do some good. He called this idea Comics for Courage. Comics for Courage is a concept that came to Pat after I told him the fantastic true story of when I was stationed in Iraq during my military service. While there, I received a huge care package of comic books from the awesome folks over at Wizard and Toy Fair magazines. We had so many comics, we didn't know what to do with them all. Seriously, it was over 100 pounds of comics. So me and a couple of buddies took the bounty of comics we had down to the give and take library we'd set up in our headquarters building. And you know what? Within 24 hours, all the comics were gone. The bottom line here is that throughout history, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, one thing remains a constant: soldiers love comics. It's quick, easy, fun reading that gives a soldier a taste of home and lets them escape into an amazing world of comics, even if it's just for a few minutes. So here's the best part of Comics for Courage. Pat and I aren't asking you to donate 1 cent of your money to Comics for Courage. What we would love is for you to donate your excess comics. You know, those ones that are just kind of laying around. Just drop them into a box or a big envelope and mail them over to supportourtroops.org. Their mailing address is Support Our Troops, 13617 North Florida Avenue, Tampa, Florida, 33613. Now, they will make sure those comics get distributed to random soldier care packages, and as a person who's been on the receiving end of this, I can tell you it will mean a lot. And if you'd rather donate money than give up a single comic book, trust me, we understand about that. You can donate through their website as well. Again, that's supportourtroops.org. Just remember two things, all right? Two things. One, make sure the comics have good, clean content. No nudity or adults-only comics, please. Those are the rules for any military member receiving goods downrange. Okay, and number two, this is the fun one. Please take a picture of you with your donation stack and post it on Twitter or Facebook at Longbox Crusade, or email it to contact@longboxcrusade.com. We'd love to give you an on-air shout-out and post your pic on the longboxcrusade.com website. In summary, Pat and I over at Longbox Crusade Podcast would greatly appreciate you taking this small action to make a difference in the life of someone who is far from home defending our freedoms. Thank you for supporting a Comics for Courage initiative. That website again is supportourtroops.org. Please check it out. Throw them some comics. Make some soldiers happy. We appreciate it. Thanks again.
Comics come in all shapes and sizes.
Coming soon from the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
It's Digest Cast, a new show dedicated to our beloved pocket-sized treasures from that bygone era of the 70s and 80s.
Hosted by the Fire and Water Podcast team of Robin Shag, and we'll be joined from time to time by special guests.
It's Digest Cast, because big things come in small packages.
Coming soon to the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
And now back to Head Speaks.
And now on to
Faster Than a Speeding Bullet.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League.
Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
The Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is
What's in Head's Long Box.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind. The world's greatest super friends.
Once again, we're going to continue our look at the Atom. We've already looked at the Sword of the Atom 4-issue miniseries. After that, he appeared in the couple of issues of the Justice League that I talked about. His next appearance was in Sword of the Atom Special, number one.
Superhero scientist Ray Palmer, trapped at 6 inches tall in the Amazon rainforest, the Sword of the Atom.
This was a one-shot special. I think it was a one-shot special. The next one came out, I think it was a year later, so I don't know if they had this planned out to do a couple of. Again, I wasn't into comics at this time. I bought this as a back issue later on. So I'm not sure if, from reading the issue and the comments at the end of the letter column, it seems like that this was a one-shot special and they decided to do another one later on. But anyways, for this issue here, this had a cover date of 1984. A very broad cover date. The actual on-sale date was April the 5th of 1984. To buy this, you had to have $1.25. This was edited by Alan Gold. The writer was Jan Strand. Artist, Gil Kane. Letterer, John Costanza. Colorist, Thomas J. Zucco. The cover credits was Gil Kane. The title of this story is called The Atom's Farewell. and this was reprinted in Sword of the Atom trade paperback, released in 2007. Now on to the story itself. To borrow a line from a good buddy of the show, the Irredeemable Shag, at the 10,000 foot level, or possibly the 22,300 mile level, the first half of this story is basically recapping the Sword of the Atom miniseries, which we covered for about 4 episodes, while the last half follows up on the Atom after that story. We have various people reading a book called Atom's Farewell by Ray Palmer and Gene Loring, as told to Norman Brawler, who's a friend of Ray's. This story is split between sections of the book and normal comic panels. We start off with various people reading Ray's book. We find ourselves with Gene Loring as she's reading the first chapter entitled Gene. This recaps how Ray and Gene met, fell in love, got married, grew apart, and ending with Gene and Paul making out, and Ray decided to go to South America. The latter part was covered in the Sword of the Atom number 1. We then switch to a judge reading chapter 6 entitled The Assault on Morlaid, which covers Ray and Leiwetha storming her father's castle. The judge kind of seems to envy Ray in his exciting swashbuckling life. We then follow Paul Hoban as an older lady, who's read Ray's book apparently, starts assaulting him with her purse and chasing him into a bathroom. Hiding out, he starts reading chapter 8 to see what the old lady is upset about. This chapter, entitled The Split, talks about Ray's return to Ivytown. Ray was having nightmares about the destruction of Morlaid, which happened at the end of the Sword of the Atom series that we talked about a couple episodes ago. Since that explosion, Ray has discovered that when he shrinks down, it causes him incredible pain and he blacks out. He does some experimentation, like a lot of people do in college, and determines that the reason for the pain is that he's absorbed too much of the white dwarf star radiation. He then goes to meet his wife for dinner. Of course, he's late. And he discovers that she's sitting with her friend, Paul Hoban, and his date, in quotes. Afterwards, Ray and Gene talk about Leiwethan, and they decide that they no longer love each other, and it's time to get a divorce. Back in real time, we see a police officer is reading chapter 10, entitled The Atom's Farewell, while his partner goes in to rescue Paul Hoban. This chapter tells how Ray and his friend Norman Brawler head back to the jungles to try and find some trace of Ray's other life. Once there, they get captured by some drug runners and tied up while they wait for Vargas. Ray uses his belt to shrink down once again and ends up saving Norman from Vargas. After destroying the drug lord's camp, Ray tells Norman that he's probably shrunk for the last time and that he's going to stay in the jungle to look for Leiwethan and her people. Vargas comes out of the jungle, ready to shoot Norman and Ray. Suddenly, he's struck down by poison arrows. This confirms to Ray that his friends are alive and nearby. He sends Norman off with a message to give the book a happy ending. The story ends with Leiwethan and Ray embracing and kissing, and a note from the editor that if you enjoyed this story, to write in and ask for more tales. The end. And now for my thoughts on this story. The cover of this, a special Sword of the Atom, 1984, 125, number 1. It shows a picture of Ray in his jungle Atom costume, if you will, with Leiwethan thrown over his shoulder, a sword in his hand, a man laying there on the ground, which I'm assuming is Vargas, arrow sticking out of the guy's hand, a gun laying on the ground. It's a very nice cover. If you like the Sword of the Atom miniseries, if you enjoy this portion of Ray's life, I think it's a great cover. It's by Gil Kane, so if you enjoy Gil Kane's artwork, it's a fantastic cover. And first I'm going to say it for this episode, as Shag would say, Leiwethan is hot. But moving on to this actual story itself, like I talked about, the story basically is The Atom's Farewell, a book that Ray Palmer and Gene Loring wrote or narrated to Norman Brawler. And I'm assuming Norman wrote the actual book. And this basically recounts, as I said, the Sword of the Atom miniseries and lets us know it resets Ray back into the jungle. Because the Sword of the Atom miniseries, if you remember right, he was coming back to America. The village was destroyed, he was regular size, and he was left to meet up with Gene at the hospital. They were still married, if you remember right. It's been 5 months five episodes ago, longer than that due to my issues, but they're still married. They were just taking a separation, so Gene was meeting with the hospital, and their future was left very indeterminate. I mean, the way the story ended, Ray didn't seem like he was going to be happy going back home, and he planned on going back to the jungles at some point and finding his little princess, if you will. The next time we saw him was in the three issues of the Justice League, which I covered. And now this kind of wraps up that story. And overall, like I said, I like the way the story works out, the way that they're switching between parts of the book and people reading the book. Let's go and go through the story, and I'll point out what I like about it, what I don't care for it. Again, like I say, the artwork in this is by Gil Kane. For the most part, Gil Kane's a good artist. Some people don't care for him, and I can see why. Gil has a very distinctive style. His face is sometimes kind of harsh, a lot of lines. I don't know if it's that or the inker, but seeing how I've seen him with different inkers, and most of his work looks the same. I'm going to say most of what I chalk up to Gil Kaneisms, if you will, is Gil Kane's responsible for. Love him or hate him, it's Gil Kane, and again, if you like Gil Kane's work, you're going to love this book. If you don't, probably not. And so, like I said, we start out, we get the chapter of the book, which is, as I said, Adam's Farewell is the name of the book. It's also the name of the story. And the subtitle of it is The Last Days of the Littlest Big Man by Ray Palmer and Gene Loring, as told to Norman Brawler. I enjoy the subtitle of this book, and I like the fact that the title is called The Adam's Farewell, which is also the name of the story. It is kind of wrapping up. It's petting the Adam on a shelf. I mean, they could still use him if they want to in the future, but if no one has an idea for an Adam story, at least he's alive and well, and this story kind of wraps everything up. So I think the title itself is a very nice title for what the story's trying to do. And again, so like the story starts out, as I said, it switches between passages from the book and people actually reading it with actual comic panels. And this starts out with a foreword by Norman Brawler. And I'm going to read this foreword just because I like the way it reads. It says, foreword by Norman Brawler. The passing of a hero from American society is a sad thing, for there are too few heroes. But it is an important event that must be set down for future generations. And so as I begin the story of Ray Palmer, alias the Atom, and his rejection of modern society for the primitive, brutal world of the jungle, I do so with a heavy heart, but also with a sense of pride that I, above all others, was chosen to share in this history-making adventure. To appreciate the significance of Ray Palmer's quest, it is first necessary to understand the world he left behind. And from there, Norman goes in to describe Ivytown. I like the way this foreword starts. It's very poetic, if you will. And also, there's a very important thing in this foreword where I believe this is the first time where it's revealed that Ray Palmer is the Atom. This gives away Ray's identity, and this is going to come up later on in the Power of the Atom series, which we'll get to eventually. Ray, at this point, when this book came out, as far as in comic universe, Ray Palmer had given up on civilian life, and he's went off the jungle to live forever, so he didn't mind giving up who he really is. Didn't really take consideration the people that's left behind, his wife, Paul, other people that may know him. As far as he's cutting all ties of modern civilization, and he's living in the jungle for the rest of his life, as far as he's concerned. The book cover of the Adam's Farewell, the book and the story, I'm assuming it's an, again, it's a comic book, so the whole thing's pen and ink and colors. So it's hard to say what's supposed to be a photograph and what's supposed to be a drawing. I am assuming this is a drawing of Ray in his Sword of the Atom costume with the jungle behind him. As far as I'm aware, he didn't have anyone taking pictures of him when he was in the jungle. So this could be a photographic cover. So I'm assuming it's an artwork. Again, I like the cover of the book. It's just a close-up of Ray, as I said, in his Sword of the Atom costume. And I enjoy Gail Kane's artwork for the most part. I love the Atom, so this is just, it's a great cover of the book in this fictional universe. So we go through the story like I talked about earlier. We show a bunch of people, and we don't know how many of these people is actually reading the book. If all these people, I'm assuming that's the people that are showing that's reading the book. If so, this book is highly popular. We've got like three people in this first panel. We got two in this next one. Then we got two or three in this next panel. We can see we got a lot of people reading the book that we're showing. Jean Laurie's reading the book. She's telling a receptionist, you know, shh, I'm not here. She's got a court she's got to go to, but she wants to get read up on this book a little bit. And like, as they're talking, or as she's reading the book, Norman's describing Jean, and he's, you know, he says he's had associate of lawyers. Seldom has he seen such mental acuity and dedication matched with the obvious compassion Miss Loring feels for the humblest of her clients. And Jean's like, geez, next thing you know, he's going to be nominating me for sainthood. I knew it. And this, he continues with, Jean Loring combines the devotion of a saint with the beauty of an angel. He refers to as Helen of Troy. And he says, we must not let her beauty beguile us into denying Jean Loring humanity. Let us remember that within the slender body beats the passionate heart of a woman. And those bright eyes are the windows in a woman's soul. The following words are hers. And like I said, the first chapter talks about how Jean met met the Atom, and her fledgling career, her boyfriend Ray Palmer. And this is something I talked about in the first episode that I talked about, The Sword of the Atom, that in that book, Jean is upset with Ray for being the Atom. She says he's hiding out from her by using the super identity. And they were together before she knew he was the Atom, but before they got married, she knew who he was. In fact, here I haven't read those stories, so I don't know if they're changing history a little bit, or maybe they didn't really touch on that very much and it's kind of expanding upon a little bit. But he says, you know, when he told her who he was, that she saw all hopes of sharing a normal life together fly out the window. My worst fears were realized. He was always in danger, and so often was she. He revealed in the danger. She detested it. He claimed his slave to the costume. And basically, this is her words. Yeah, again, I talked about a lot of this in the first episode of my feelings about Jean and how she cheated on Ray. Again, if you're not happy in a marriage, you need to be an adult and talk to your partner and explain the situation to them and realize that marriages, while they are supposed to be for life, don't always work out. If you're not happy, instead of cheating on your spouse with somebody else, you need to talk to your spouse. And if you guys can't work it out, if you feel that you're not happy with who you are or who you're with, maybe you guys need to get a divorce and go your separate ways instead of, like Jean did, cheating on Ray. So again, I've got some very hard feelings on her about the way she treated Ray. And so that may be where I'm coming from when I'm reading her portion of the book. But to me, like I said, she's just trying to sugarcoat the reason that she left Ray, and didn't really leave Ray, but she cheated on Ray with her partner, Paul. She says that, you know, he became a slave to the costume. His every waking moment was devoted to the study of size control. He needed new challenges. And she said she retaliated by immersing herself in the study of tax law. She got bigger, so she needed a partner. And that's where she met Paul Hoban. He was a good attorney, good looking, and most of all attentive. All the women fell in love with him, and I do mean all. And she says here that they had an affair. She should have felt guilty, but she didn't. And she said, like, I'm just, as I'm going through this, again, I get to the scene that from the first issue of the Sword of the Atom miniseries where Ray comes out in the rain and finds Paul and Jean making out. And again, according to this, Jean said that she was going to confront Ray that night, that she was tired of hurting him, where she didn't want to hurt him, but she was tired of being alone. I say alone. And the story says, after a particular night of working late, in quotes, Paul drove me home. So I'm assuming not only were they working, but they were working, if you know what I mean. And she talks about how, what I mentioned in the first issue, when he talked about going to South America, the Amazon, for a research trip. She pretended to be asleep. She let him make the decision. He chose to go. And again, to me, at least, it seems like she's trying to push the blame all this on Ray. She's saying that he chose to go. He made the decision. But her faking asleep when she could hear what he was saying, her choosing not to answer, her choosing to pretend to be asleep, to me, she made the choice just as much as Ray did. If she actually loved him at this point, if she actually wanted to try to make their marriage work, she could have said something, she could have spoken up. But again, her remaining silent, her pretending to be asleep, was her choosing. So just the way she words it in here, that she let him make the decision and he chose to go. I don't know, it really irritates me. And again, I'm enjoying the writing in this story because this comic makes me feel, I don't want to say hatred, but it just fills me with disgust with Gene. And I don't know if that's quite what he's going for, but that's what I'm feeling with her, just with her actions. And again, like I say, she's trying to push the blame all off on Ray when, again, as I said in the first episode of this little series, mini series that I'm covering, she knew what she was getting into when she said yes to marrying Ray. She knew he was the Atom. She may not realize what it all entailed, but she knew what she was getting into. She chose to cheat on Ray. She chose to pretend to be asleep here and let Ray make that decision. So her trying to put a lot of this blame on Ray, and maybe it's the feelings I've had. I've been divorced myself, as I've talked about previously. So it may be some of those feelings coming up, and that may be why. And again, I love the Atom, especially the Ray Palmer version. So that may be partly why I've got such feelings regarding this whole scene towards Gene. I may be overplaying it, but I may be overreacting a little bit to it. But again, this whole thing, sort of that a miniseries and this, just puts a bad taste for Gene in my mouth. I don't know. What happens later on, which I may touch on at some points with Gene. Well, we'll get that when we get to that. But anyways, so as we move on to the story, Gene's going to a court, and speaking of court, we find a judge reading the book. Again, this sold on Mortal Aid. And as I said, I like the way that this story switches between people reading the book, and then we're getting chapters of the book in comic form. It's not just a prose book. While I do love reading a book, and I would read this book if this was a book I could actually read, I would actually read this. But I do like the way it's divided up and broken up, and we're getting, you know, comic panels with some of the book in there. And like I said, the next chapter covers Ray's adventures in Mortalay. I'm not going to recap any of this because I covered all this for four episodes. Like, I've talked enough about this. But moving on, the judge is reading, hands the book, and as I said earlier, that he kind of envies, it seems like he envies Ray. And again, I get that mostly from kind of reading between the lines, because as he's talking, he makes a comment here that, you know, Ray's led an interesting life. There's nothing in Ivytown to compare with rebel insurrections and alien princesses. We Ivytowners must seem a boring lot to a man like you. But then again, we can't all go bouncing around on frogs, brandishing swords, and picnicking on toadstools. Frankly, I don't even see the appeal. Hi-ho, Kermit. And so he says that it's not for him, that he doesn't see the appeal in it. But, and again, maybe I'm just reading too much in between the lines and the artwork on this, the way his face looks. But to me, and like I say, maybe I could be reading it wrong, but I think that the whole I don't see the pill, hi-ho Kermit, I think that he's covering up for the fact that it sounds like an exciting life that he would never be able to live. He's denying that existence, I think, that feeling. And again, I like the fact, the judge goes to court. He tells his bailiff that it shouldn't be too long, and the bailiff's like, take your time, as he pulls his own copy of the book out. And again, there's a nice transition here on this page. It's a regular-sized panel. It's broken up. And half of the panel is the judge walking off the bailiff reading. The bottom diagonal corner of the panel is Paul Hoban at the store, trying to remember some perfume that Gene likes. And this old lady behind him. And I've heard stories about people like this old lady in real life that gets upset with an author that they don't like the way the author treated the fictional character. In this story, though, this isn't a fictional character. This is a true life book, if you will. So she really doesn't like the way Gene and Ray's marriage ended up, and she blames Paul for it. In fact, as they're talking, she's I'm going to read this little dialogue because I like the way the dialogue in this is written. She's like, I know you. Yeah, Hoban fellow, the one in the book. You ruined Gene Loring's marriage to that little 6-inch professor. I'm surprised you'd show your face in public. Reckon up that lovely couple. What she sees at you is absolutely invisible to the naked eye. And Paul's like, Madam, please, Gene and I are quite capable of handling our own affair or personal lives. I like the way he starts calling it an affair. And while it was an affair at one time, he didn't want to use that word, so he kind of stumbles on personal lives. And she's like, you should both be ashamed. Imagine dumping her loving husband just because he's short. And a Lothario like you, too. I know your kind with your fancy cars, fast talk, your finger bowl restaurants, and skinny waiters. I'm a well-read woman. I know how you lure innocent girls with swinging bachelor pads, eat fish, eggs, and silk pajamas with chopsticks. I know you and your stereos and your Frank Sinatra and your Benny Goodman. And he rushes off saying, my dear lady, please, don't you dear lady me. You won't impress me with your trashy talk. I have read Noel Coward. I'm hep to your tricks. I know about oysters. I don't care what it says in chapter 8. Those two are meant for each other, and you ruined it. You're the devil, that's what. A demon in human form. Devil, Satanist, homewrecker. So she runs, falls into the bathroom, beating on him with her purse. Love the artwork of this. Paul's dropping his bags as she's beating on him. And again, the artwork's great. As you know, she's rushing in, chasing him. And I can just imagine this playing out in real life. This woman that's read these stories. And again, while I do blame Paul slightly, because again, it takes two to tango and three to foxtrot, I believe. But it takes two to tango. And I'm sure that Paul knew Gene was married when they got involved. So again, he does have to share part of the blame. But to me, Gene needs to take lion's share of the responsibility. I mean, she was the one that was married to Ray. She was the one that, again, I don't want to say she chased Paul or, you know, she initiated things, but being the married woman, she's the one that should have stopped it and said, hey, wait, I'm married, I can't do this. She should have talked to Ray sooner. And I feel that if it wasn't Paul, it would have been some other guy in the office or some other guy she met at lunch or there would have been some other Paul Hoban, in quotes, to be there just because she was dissatisfied with their marriage. So, yes, while Paul, as I said, does take a portion of the blame, I don't think he's quite as bad as this old lady thinks he is. And especially, like, the next chapter of the book that Paul reads while he's waiting on the toilet for help. This goes in and talks about it. In fact, let's get into that. It talks about how the city exploded, how Ray was washed ashore. He's having nightmares about that. And it goes through here saying that he's not sure if it's the costume or why he's getting these headaches and passing out from changing into the Atom. He has a machine that was able to shrink him down, and he still has the same effect of being getting pain and passing out. My comment on this is that he talks about, he doesn't mention his Justice League adventures here. And over there, he didn't do a whole lot. He shrunk down a couple of times. So I don't know if the writer of this, Jan Strand, maybe mispronouncing the guy's name, but I'm not sure. But anyways, I'm not sure if the writer of this book and the Justice League corresponded at all. It doesn't seem that way. Or maybe the pain started after that adventure and that's why we didn't see him anymore. My understanding is Ray just showed up in those three issues and then we didn't see him anymore in the Justice League. Next time we see him is in this story. So it could be that those issues of the Justice League took place right after the Sword of the Atom, and then after that's when he started feeling the effects and having these problems. In fact, that'd probably be my no-prize answer for that, is that the Justice League stories happened right after he returned, and it was after that's when he started having the pain and when he started passing out. And that leads to this, where he's determined that he's absorbed too much white dwarf star radiation. That's why he's having these problems. But again, so Ray, like I say, uses the machine, shrinks himself, and now he's stuck at 6 inches high with a giant cat chasing him around. And again, it's standard trope for, you know, when you shrink down, you get either a dog or a cat. Usually it's a cat, because cat loves mice and small little animals like that. Usually a cat or something like that will be chasing you around. As I said, that's a standard trope for these kind of stories. When someone shrinks down, they get chased. So I do like the fact they didn't spend too long on it. I spent, two pages of him running and getting away from the cat, getting back in the beam just in time to grow back large again. And I do, again, I like the fact that he set up the beam to go off after a couple hours, which gave him enough time to pass out and have his little mini adventure, if you will, and get back in the beam before it went off. And again, they set up a little bit of a drama here, is will he make it back in time? The beam only stays on for a second, so as he's running back for the beam, it gives you a little bit of, can he do any, I don't know if he trips or he jumps. He jumps and slides into the beam and able to grow back tall. And when he wakes up, he's got the cat licking him, which is kind of funny. That's what he sees. In fact, he makes a comment here. He's like, when I finally woke up, the cat rubbed against me like an old friend. That's cats for you. And again, for people that know me in real life, I'm not a Cats fan, either the musical or the animal. So I understand Ray's point here, that, you know, that's the cat in 1 minute trying to kill you, then the next minute they're loving on you. And so Ray's already late for his date because of the passing out. So he has to go in the clothes he has on. His car's getting towed, so we get the taxi. It's like nothing. It's like if you believe in fate or the universe trying to do things, fate or whatever is trying to keep him. Or if you want to go to Quantum Leap, God, time, fate or whatever, is trying to keep him apart. Doesn't want to get back together. So as I said, he shows up, and Paul Hoban happens to be there with Paul, with some woman he's on a date with. And he says that Jean's annoyed. He's not sure if it's because he showed up late or just because he showed up at all. And I think I made a snarky comment in the synopsis that made it sound like I'm not quite sure if Paul showed up accidentally or if this was their plan. But whatever it is, Paul's date's having none of it. She excuses herself to powder her nose, again in quotes. She doesn't come back. Paul picked up the check. Ray said he didn't argue because he spent all the money on cab because his car was towed. And Ray makes a comment here that Jean watches him go, and she had a look in her eyes like a puppy getting left at the pound. And like I said, the next couple pages, Jean and Ray talk. And again, this is all flashback of what's going on in the book. And Jean asks, for Ray to tell him about Leviathan. It's a pretty name. He'd like to know more about her. And so again, Ray talks more about his time with her and how the adventure and everything was a thrill for him. Ray makes comment that, he feels like he should be with Leviathan, and that sort of life suits him, where life in Ivytown with Paul suits Jean. And Jean's like, you don't have to plead my case for me, Ray. The question is, what do you do about this? I know a counselor. And Ray's like, to do what? Convince us we're happy when we're not? Help two people live each other? You'd rather be living someone else? And so at this point, they just say, you know, Ray says, Jean says, we throw in the talent defeat. And Ray's like, it isn't defeat to go after what you want. This isn't a test of endurance, Jean. It's life. And even in Ivy Town, life is short. You only go around once. Cripes, I sound like a beer commercial. Yes, you do. But you're right. It's crazy to postpone happiness once you know what you want. So again, the two of them talk it out, and they decide that it's best for them to get a divorce. And this is something they should have done before she started fooling around with Paul, but better late than never, I guess. Better to admit, like Ray said, that, you know, they're not happy. No sense beating around the bush. No sense pretending they are and living miserable lives. So I do like the fact that they're able to talk things out. And again, the crazy lady in this story that was chasing Paul, this is what she's referring to. She blames Paul, even though this part of the story makes, you know, it definitely tells us that Ray and Jean talked it out. And they both decided that it's best if they just divorce and go their separate ways. And then the final chapter, I don't know if it's the final chapter in the book, but it's the final, I'm assuming it is. The final chapter here is called The Adams Farewell. And as I said, this is Ray and Norman going to the Amazon rainforest to try to find the remainder, the rest of Llewellyn and her people. And in the story, Norman tells us that the book advances what helped pay for this expedition. And like I said, the artwork of this has been pretty good. It's Gil Kane artwork, not much to say about it. Here on page 27, a couple panels, Norman looks a little rough. He's not fully drawn out, I don't think. I don't know if it's the artist or the inker's fault. Again, the other panel, he looks fine. But yeah, just like he's not fully drawn in here or something. He looks like a cartoon character almost. But then, you know, Norman's telling him, how are you going to find them? A few six-inch people. And Ray tells him, well, that's going to be a problem. But the bigger problem is that the spot they're looking for is close to an illegal cocoa field. The source of cocaine. The closer we get to our goal, the more our lives will be in danger. And Norman's like, cocaine smugglers? Maybe we ought to turn back, but we still got our heads. There's no turning back, Ray. So Ray's serious about finding his little princess. And Norman goes on to tell the story how they worked together on this for a little while searching. And finally Ray trusted Norman enough to actually let him help so he'd get some rest. And I talked about this in the synopsis, how they stumbled across in the jungle. And apparently they found a new camp that was set up. And Ray figures that this new camp is in a clearing that was created by the explosion of the city. And so some of the drug smugglers that may be associated with the people from the first issue of the Sword of the Atom that caused all this in the first place, they set up a camp in the clearing that was created by the explosion. So I kind of like how they tie this drug smugglers camp back to what happened in the first miniseries with the explosion, and that's why there was this clearing that these guys could set this camp up in. And then here on page 31, Ray shrinks down again, as I mentioned, to get away. They're tied up waiting on this big boss Vargas to show up, and Ray shrinks down. I really love the artwork on this page. I love what Gil Kane did. We got a picture of Ray's head, and then we see him shrinking down, changing into the Adam costume as he shrinks. Again, just a very, very dynamic page. I just love the artwork in this, especially when this panel, this page right here, page 31, it's a full splash page showing Ray shrinking down and changing into the Adam, again, as he's passed out. And Norman says, you know, as they hear Vargas pulling up, that either turn Ray over to the Vargas and hope for the best, or roll the dice and hide Ray to get away. So he throws Rav a little hole in the wall. And he tells, when Varga shows up, what happened to your buddy? He's like, well, he got away. The cops are on the way, buddy. Or the authorities. And Varga's like, and they will find your carcass hanging on a hook. Your friend has condemned you to a slow, painful death, gringo. And as I talked about, Ray's able to wake up. And I like this. He runs to the cage and he climbs up the bars of the cage. Not the bars, but the wire mesh of the cage. And they would open the cage and let the dogs out. And like here on page 35, the dogs are escaping. They're Doberman pinchers. And Ray jumps on the back of one and grabs the animal's ears. And he's doing this. He's thinking, and again, only in comics can, while this is going on, can you think all this. But Ray jumps on the back of the dog's head. He's like, there's a little known hypothesis that proposes if a 6-inch man were to jump on the neck of a crazed Doberman, he could actually steer the beast by pulling its ears, providing caught the Doberman by surprise, and told it where it was going. And again, so the dogs are attacking the gun smugglers, or the drug smugglers. And again, I just like the way this page is drawn. It's laid out. Like I say, the thought balloons that Ray has, as much as he's thinking in this short period of time, could only happen in a comic or a movie or something where you can control the pace of time. In reality, he wouldn't have enough time to think all this. But again, they, as I said, they get away. They steal some gas and they blow the camp up. And I like this. As they're sitting there talking, the animals and dogs fled. They jumped into the river nearby. And we got this here on page 38, near the end of the book. Ray and Norman are talking. First of all, Ray's a little taller than 6 inches here. Just a minor nitpick, because he can't control his size at this point. He's stuck at a 6-inch height. But here he's up almost to Norman's knee. Again, assuming Norman's an average-sized guy, that knee's got to be a foot or so, or his leg, his lower leg. That's got to be a foot or so high. So Ray's a bit taller than 6 inches here. Again, just a minor nitpick. Other than that, I love the way, and that also kind of helps, because he was smaller, it'd be harder to see him. But I love the way Norman and Ray are standing silhouetted against the fire as Ray tells them that, you know, I made my choice. I shrank possibly for the last time. Just because I haven't found the Lathan yet doesn't mean I'm ready to give up trying. And Norman's like, but you don't even know she's alive. She could have died when Morley exploded, or even now. And Ray's like, but don't you see? That doesn't matter anymore. Ray Palmer, the man you knew, is dead. He died 2 hours ago. I killed him when I decided to shrink. Whatever happens from this point on, whatever the future holds in store for me, I have to face it as I am now, as the Atom. And like this is, Vargas comes out of the jungle. Then face me, little man. I am your destiny. You have destroyed my operation, but you did not destroy me. You burned my buildings, but you did not burn me. I live. I live. And I'm going to kill you for what you have done. Ah! And again, as I said, I thought the cover may have been Vargas, but looking at it, apparently not, because the guy on the cover looks bald. As we see here, Vargas has a full head of hair. So apparently the guy on the cover is not quite from the story, but again, I love the way Vargas is laying here, the arrows in his hand. And as I said in the synopsis, Ray sees the arrows. That tells him that it's Lathan and his men and her men. He tells Norman to run off, get the boat before it leaves. Don't worry about me. Hurry home and write that book. And remember, when you get to the last chapter, give it a happy ending. And so we finish up the actual book here. I took another 2 steps, mindful of Ray Adam's warning not to miss the boat. But suddenly I found 100 questions to ask him. I stopped and turned, and he was gone, vanished if he never existed. I never saw him again. Did the arrows that saved our lives indeed belong to the archer Voss? And if so, was the Princess Lathan still alive? And if she was, would she remember the Atom? These questions must have haunted him as he neared the end of his journey. As 2 tiny figures emerged slowly from the shadows of the underbrush, only he will know the answers. And again, we end the story with Ray finding Lathan and Voss. And Voss tells Adam that she made him come back every day. She wouldn't listen to reason. And Voss is like, now, my question is, are you with us to stay? And Adam's like, to stay, Voss? Here, let me show you. And he gives Lathan a big kiss. It says the end. And as I said in the synopsis, it ends with a little note. Readers, we still receive mail praising the Sword of the Atom miniseries of 1983. If you like the turn that Adam's life has taken in this special and want to follow his new adventures in Unlimited series, please take action, write, send correspondence, as well as praises to the Sword of the Atom. And this was back when they were in New York. And then the letters page ends with a little section titled, a little text page that says the Atom reclaims the sword. And the first line starts out, what follows is a thinly disguised appeal, first the disguise. And basically it talks a little bit about Gil Kane finishing up book 3 of the Sword of the Atom miniseries. And it talks a little bit about the behind the scenes and the appeal about if you like what they've done in the Sword of the Atom, let them know. It says if you don't like certain aspects, let them know. And I get where, and this was done by Alan Gold, and I get where they're coming from. Again, as a podcaster, I find myself asking you guys the same thing all the time. If you like what I'm doing, let me know. If you don't like something I'm doing, let me know so I can maybe make some changes to make things better for you guys to listen. And again, that same thing that Alan's writing here in this little text box on this page, that, you know, if you like what they're doing, let them know. If you don't, let them what they can do difference. But anyways, that is the Sword of the Atom special number 1. I'm going to spoil things now and say there are 2 more to come, but that's for the future. For this episode and this part of What's in Head's Long Box, all I'm going to say is that, as you can probably tell from my synopsis of it and my talking about it, I enjoyed this series. I'm a big Atom fan, so of course I love this book. I love the previous series. Again, this was a different direction for the Atom, this entire series and these specials. This put him in a swashbuckling hero. And I don't know if maybe they, like I say, he showed up in 3 issues of the Justice League. I don't know if they got some feedback saying they preferred the Sword of the Atom stories better. I'm not sure why they went back to this direction. They could have left him in the superhero community. Or maybe this was Jan Strand's and Gil Kane's idea to put him back here. I don't know exactly behind the scenes how it worked out. If I got a chance, I would love to talk with Jan Strand and find out details about the behind the scenes on how it got from point A to point B to point C. But again, I love this book. I definitely recommend picking up the trade paperback. I've got the individual issues. As I think I talked about several months back, my wife got me, again, I had the miniseries myself. I think I still have it boxed up in the garage. I've got to go through them. But for Christmas this last year, my wife got me the Sword of the Atom miniseries from the local comic shop. She bought the individual issues, so I know I do have them now. May have caught doubles copies, I don't know. But I'm going to end it here and just say that I really like this series. I definitely recommend people checking it out, especially if you're a fan of the Atom. Have you guys read this? What do you think? Let me know. As usual, you can email me at head@headspeaks.com. Or you can go to the Facebook page, just look for Head Speaks. Or on Twitter, you can search for the Headcast Network and give me your thoughts. What do you guys think about the Sword of the Atom? Did you like it? Did you not like it? Again, as I said before, you can always send me an MP3, as Ben Avery did here several months back, and give me your thoughts that way. Let me know what you guys think and how I can make this show better for you. All right? Anyways, we're going to go take a break, and I'll be right back with you.
Head Speaks will be back after these important messages.
Hello there. This is Jared Albrick, a.k.a. the Yard Sale Artist, with a quick podcast promo for my show, Comics with Normies. Here's how the show works. Using my yard sailing skills, I acquire a random comic book from a yard sale. I then give said random comic to a normie, a normie being a person who doesn't normally read comic books. Then, on the show, I'll sit down with the normie to discuss the issue, get a real outsider's point of view, and see what some of the comics that we love, and maybe not love so much, seem like to those normal folks we see walking around on the streets each day. It should be a fun perspective and good for a few laughs. You can check out the Comics with Normies podcast, along with some other fun-filled podcasts from White Rocket Entertainment, on iTunes and at whiterocket.podbean.com. And feel free to join the show using Twitter handle at Normies Podcast or on Facebook at Comics with Normies. Once again, you can find Comics with Normies on iTunes and at whiterocket.podbean.com. We'll see you there.
Hey, who likes Wild Dog?
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
No, 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 no. I am taking this podcast seriously. There's no way that song will appear anywhere in the show or even the commercials. I'm doing this right. I'm FKA Jason of the Silver and Gold Podcast. On September 17th, 2016, a new show will be appearing on the SNG feed. Wild Pod, a Wild Dog Podcast, is a mini-series covering the DC Comics character that is sort of their answer to the Punisher, Wild Dog. I'll be covering the original four-issue miniseries, the 1989 special, and various other appearances of Wild Dog. Watch for it at sngpod.com or the Silver and Gold feed on iTunes and Stitcher. Vance, why do we even own that CD?
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping on the door. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping on the door. You can wag your tail, but I ain't gonna feed you no more.
And now back to Head Speaks.
And now, here we go with...
On your mark, get set. We're riding on the internet.
The internet is really, really great.
For porn.
I got a fast connection, so I don't have to wait.
For porn.
What? There's always some new site.
For porn.
I browse all day and night.
For porn.
It's like I'm surfing at the speed of light.
For porn.
Internet porn, Roman orgy scenes. Internet porn, dominatrix queens. Internet porn, girl on girl on girl on girl on girl on guy on sheep.
Bet you're going surfing on the internet.
Where is Head going?
This month, we're going to talk about a podcast called Wild Pod, a Wild Dog podcast. This is from S&G Productions, which is Silver and Gold. The Silver and Gold show talks about Booster Gold and Captain Atom. And they also have a Blue Beetle podcast, and one of his newest endeavors is the Wild Pod, as I said, a Wild Dog podcast. And from their website, which is located at sngpod.wordpress.com, Wild Pod, on September 17th, 2016, FKA Jason started this podcast miniseries that reviews the 1987 DC Comics miniseries Wild Dog by Max Allen Collins and Terry Beatty, as well as the character's subsequent appearances in other comic titles. As I said, this series came out in 1987. That was right around the time I started collecting comics. I can't remember now if I picked it up directly off of the, well, not the newsstand, I was going to the comic shop. I don't remember if I picked this up out of the comic shop directly when it came out, or if I bought it shortly thereafter. But I do know I read this early in my comic book collecting experience. And again, I don't remember the details about it, other than what FK Jason has covered on his podcast, but I do remember enjoying the Wild Dog miniseries. As far as the podcast, FKA Jason's doing a fantastic job. This started because Wild Dog appeared in Action Comics Weekly for a while, and FKA Jason, I think, was forced to go on that show and talk about Wild Dog. And at the time, he didn't seem to care too much for it, but I think it got the better of him, and eventually, and Grutus, I'm going to say, loved the character. That's why he has a podcast. He's five episodes in, not too far back if you guys want to get started on it. I definitely recommend this podcast. Wild Dog, in the meantime, has showed up on CW's Arrow. It's a different character as far as who he really is than he was in the comics. I'm not going to spoil either the show or the podcast or the comic for you, but it is a different person beneath the mask than was in the comic series. But again, Wild Dog was a 4-issue miniseries, and then he appeared in Action Comics Weekly for a while, and then he appeared one or two other times. So I don't think the podcast has much longer to go because there's not a lot more coverages of him that they can do. But I definitely recommend checking it out. Again, I really enjoyed the comic from what I can remember. Again, I haven't actually sat down and read it in a while. But I'm really enjoying FKA Jason's coverage of it. So definitely, again, the Wild Dog is kind of a Punisher-type character. I would say he's DC's answer to the Punisher, but that was actually Vigilante. He's DC's retort to their own answer to the... Anyways, he's kind of a Punisher character. He believes in shooting people if needs be and taking the law in his own hands. If you enjoy that type of character, definitely check out FKA Jason's Wild Pod, a Wild Dog podcast. Again, it's available at his website of sngpod.wordpress.com. And you can find it on iTunes, I'm sure, all the other great download places for your podcasts. But yes, check out Wild Pod, a Wild Dog podcast. And tell Marin sent you. Now, let's go ahead and move on to...
Mail Time!
Mail Time!
Here's the mail, it never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
You've got mail.
And as usual for Head Speaks, I don't have any mail at this point. But I do have Twitters and Facebooks, so let's go ahead and go to those. First, we're going to look at Twitter. Our Twitter can be found under the Headcast Network. And this is basically all of my shows wind up under here. We have 6 Point Movies, Alexander Oasis, Ben and Josh, Comics in the Golden Age, DC in the 80s, which is a really good page that talks about stuff from the 80s comic-wise. In fact, they posted my transcript of my interview with Paul Kupperberg on there, and I've been on, I think it was on that same page for G.I. Joe, the Impel, and all the trading cards from back in the late 80s. That's a great page. Anyways, continuing on, Dillian C. Pound, DC Bros Prod, Geeks Talk Back Podcast, Good Times, Great Movies, How Is This Movie, Jared Albrick, a.k.a. The Yard Sale Artist, who, if you listen to my G.I. Joe, A Real American Headcast podcast, he's been showing up over there, or going to be showing up over there, a GLI Podcast, Joe Crawford, Justice's First Dawn, The Long Box Crusade, who is ran by Pat Sampson, who's also joined us over on the G.I. Joe World American Headcast, Michael Bailey, Noah Tonaro, Out of the Fridge, Phil Edwards, at Live for Films, Quadcast Courtney, Ryan Daly, who's, again, another one of my co-hosts over on the G.I. Joe World American Headcast, and he's got an own stream podcast of his own. Salem Al-Shilam, Second Union, Sean Merrick, So Gallifrey Podcast, Stroke Hope, The 13th Dimension, The Damn Sports Cast, The Shack, The Best of the Bat, Warlord Worlds, which is Ruth and Darren Sutherland, who often gives shout-outs to my podcast. Thank you, Ruth and Darren, a great couple. Has her own podcast talking about Warlord and Mike Grell. Definitely check them out. The Wild Dog Podcast, which I talked about just a few minutes ago. And last but not least, Willie Yarborough. Thanks, Willie. How you doing, buddy? And then moving on to Facebook. These are people that either liked or recommented or reposted us, reshared us, whatever, for both Head Speaks and the Headcast Network. Alberto Rodriguez, Ben Losasso, Billy Locke, Carlos Mucha, Clinton Robinson, Corey Hodgson, David Johnson, David K. Kinkle. Sorry, that was David W. Kinkle. Dizzy Williams, Edgar Miha Norman, Edwin Garcia, Gene Hendricks, who is a buddy of mine, another podcaster. I've been on his show once or twice. I've had him on mine. Grant Richter, James Johnson, Javier, I'm going to mess this up, Aliquesis, Joshua Hayek, Mark Volwerk, Moran Valian, Mike Gillis, Pat Sampson, Raffaello Arcado, Roger Preeb, again, Ryan Daly, Sean Merrick, The Average Geek Show, The Batman Nightcast, that's Ryan's great show that talks about Batman. He's kind of doing what Michael Bailey's doing and looking at Batman from the post-crisis all the way up through, I'm not sure where they're going to stop at, but a great run of Batman. The Irredeemable Shag, who has a JLI podcast, which I guess I'll pimp right now. I'm supposed to show up there this next month or so, episode 13. The JLI crossed over with the Suicide Squad, and I'm going to be Shag's special guest talking about the Suicide Squad, so check that out. That is the JLI Bwahaha podcast. The Long Box Crusade, Tim Wallace, and finally, When It Was Cool. Well, again, that's all the Twitters and Facebooks and everything. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Again, one last apology for the delays. Hopefully I'm getting things worked out so we don't do that again. Join us here next month when we will continue our look at the Atom. I'm not sure what else we're going to be looking at this point, but we will be looking at the Sword of the Atom special number 2. Also, in the meantime, keep an eye out for, as I just mentioned, the JLI Wahaha podcast, episode 13, where I, yours truly, will be joining the Irredeemable Shag as we talk about the Justice League International 13 and Suicide Squad number 13, their first little crossover. And also check out my other great shows. Again, we got the G.I. Joe, A Real American Headcast. That's come back with episode 13. Again, I have Ryan Daly and Jared Albrick, the Art Cell Artist, joining me as we talk about issue 13 of the Real American Hero comic series, plus the first episode of the Pyramid of Darkness, which was the first actual season of G.I. Joe, the cartoon. Join us, we're having fun over there. And then I also have my other two shows, Task Force X, where I'm finishing up the Deadshot 4-issue miniseries. I'll be covering the last two now. And then we're back into our regular Suicide Squad Checkmate coverage. And then finally over on the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour, where I'm in the middle of the Invasion crossover. Fun times over there. Go check us out. Again, if you want your thoughts and notes and messages read on the air, go ahead and send me a message. You can send me an email to head@headspeaks.com. I will read your email on the air. Again, if you're on iTunes, go to iTunes and leave us a review, preferably 5 stars, but whatever you want, and leave us a review on there. I'll read that on the air. But again, they always say, again, I don't know how true this is, but everyone tells me that the more reviews you get, the better reviews you get over on iTunes, the higher up in the searches will come. So definitely let everyone know about the show. Help us out. Go leave us a review on iTunes. And I apologize for this background noise. It's a busy day around here right now. A lot of cars outside. But, send us an email, iTunes review. Go to the Facebook page. You can go to either the Head Speaks or the Headcast Network. Leave us a comment on there. Let me know how I'm doing. Let me know what you think, what you like, what you don't like. Leave your thoughts on my thoughts on this episode. Or you can go to headspeaks.com. Or go directly to this page, which is head.headspeaks.com. I am in the process of doing some revamping to the website, mainly to the Headspeaks main page. I had some comments from some fellow podcasters on a Facebook page that said it wasn't very user-friendly, so I'm going to revamp that. I'm working on that currently. Hopefully I'll have that done soon. But I think that's going to be it. Until next time, thank you all for listening, and join me again, hopefully next month, as we bring in episode 31. And not only will I be covering, as I said, the Sword of the Atom number 2 special, but that will be my actual third anniversary episode. 3 years ago from next month, June, is when I started this little adventure. So come join us and let's see what we got going on. Finally, let's move on to the song of the month. Again, as I normally do, I'm going to put a song at the very end of the after the outro. This month, we're going to play a song entitled Poison by a New Edition spinoff group called Belle Biv DeVoe. This song was released February the 24th, 1990. And again, I used to listen to this song. I used to, like I said, it was an old school rap and some of the hip hop stuff. So again, this came out in 1990. The genre is considered New Jack Swing. So, again, as I said, it's Poison by Belle Biv DeVoe. Definitely check them out. I enjoy their songs. At least a few of them that I've had. Didn't really listen to all their songs, but I did enjoy Poison. So, Poison. Da, da, da. Anyways, that's it. So, until next time, remember,
Head has spoken.
Thank you for listening to another fantastic episode of Head Speaks. Hope you enjoyed it. If so, let me know. Drop me an email to head@headspeaks.com or visit our home at head.headspeaks.com. You can also visit and talk with me on Facebook and Google+, both under Head Speaks. You can also send an MP3 file with your thoughts and I can play that on the air. And you can also get more of me on my other podcasts. Be sure to listen to Task Force X, where monthly I look at John Ostringer's Suicide Squad and Paul Kupperberg's Checkmate comics from the 80s and early 90s. Also, over on G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast, my podcasting friends Ryan Daly and Kyle Benning, along with myself, are looking at all of the G.I. Joe, a Real American Hero comics and related titles from Marvel and IDW. All of my headcasts are available on iTunes and Stitcher, along with the respective blogs and my main page at headspeaks.com. All comments, thoughts, and opinions expressed on Head Speaks are owned wholly by the speaker of said comments and do not express the opinions of Head Speaks, unless, of course, I'm the one making the comments. Head Speaks, Task Force X, and G.I. Joe, Real American Headcast, are all part of the Headcast family. So join us next month for another wonderful episode of Head Speaks. Until then, I'll see you in the funny pages. Good night.
Yeah, Spider-Man and freeze in full effect. I'm ready.
You ready, dude?
I'm ready, Slick. Are you?
Oh, yeah. Take it down.
Girl, I must
warn you.
I sense something strange in my mind.
Yeah.
Yo. Situation is
serious.
Let's cure it, cause we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm. Tell them, Rick.
It's all so
beautiful.
Relationships, they seem from the start. It's all so
deadly
when love is not together from the heart. Check it out.
It's driving me out of my mind. That's why it's hard for me to find. Can't get it out of my head. Miss her, kiss her, love
wrong
her.
Wrong move, you're dead.
That girl is
if I were you, I'd take precaution
before I step to meet my girl. You know, cause in some
caution,
you'll think she's the best thing in the world.
Fellow like the vote getting paid late, so better lay low. Scheming on hot money and the whole shit. The low pro ho should be cut like an afro. So what you saying, huh? She's a winner to you, but I know she's a loser.
How did you know?
Me and the crew used to do her. Slick blow.
It's driving me out of my mind. That's why it's hard for me to find. Can't get it out of my head. Miss her, kiss her, love her. That girl is
poison. You never trust a big button to smile.
And I can't forget about my boy Lee Brown
and the whole Andy crew.
Poison.